Campus FM presents 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri. Welcome to this anniversary series, remembering 100 years of women on campus. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and I shall be looking at this theme from many different angles, the sociological, the statistical, the anthropological, and the historical. I shall be asking questions about life for female students and academics on and off campus, yesterday and today, and possibly also tomorrow. I'm very pleased to have with me today two guests, Dr. Marceline Naudi and Professor Marie-Thérèse Camilleri-Podesta. Just the usual brief word about my guests. Dr. Naudi is a senior lecturer in the Department of Gender Studies at the Faculty of Social Wellbeing here at the University. She received her first degree from the University of Malta, her master degree in Women's Studies from the University of Bradford, and her doctorate from Manchester University. She's head of the Department of Gender Studies and contributes to teaching and supervision of student research within several other university departments on gender issues, violence against women, and other anti-oppressive issues, LGBTIQ, ethnicities, disabilities. She is the scientific coordinator of the European Observatory on Femicide, which was launched on the 1st of March in 2018 and is currently hosted by the University of Malta. She represented Malta on the Council of Europe Ad Hoc Committee on Violence Against Women and Domestic Violence, which drafted the Istanbul Convention, and in June of this year was elected president of its group of experts, the GREVIO. She also served as the chairperson of the Commission on Domestic Violence here in Malta from 2006-2010 and as a member and chairperson of the Gender Issues Committee of the University of Malta for many years. Professor Marie-Thérèse Camilleri-Podesta is a professor in the Department of Anatomy, Faculty of Medicine and Surgery. After graduating as a medical doctor in 1969 and following 2 years' housemanship at St. Luke's Hospital, Professor Camilleri-Podesta joined the Department of Anatomy here at the university as a research assistant in 72. She was granted a British Council scholarship to pursue doctoral studies in the UK in the field of pathology, and after some months obtained a welcome grant which helped her make life in the UK a little easier. On her return to Malta, Professor Camilleri-Podesta's academic career progressed and she was promoted to Professor and Head of the Department of Anatomy in 1981. She was the first female professor at the University of Malta and remained the sole female professor for about 20 years. Professor Camilleri-Podesta has a lifelong interest in gender issues, is at present chair of the Gender Issues Committee here at the university, and works hard to improve the situation for women wishing to pursue their dreams. So two ladies who have gender issues very much at heart. I suppose we better start off with a general question. A gender mainstreaming is what we're going to be talking about today, and it's a bit of a buzzword which one hears said in various contexts, and it covers a breadth of issues, so I feel it's important to explain what is meant by gender mainstreaming and possibly looking at gender identities as well. Perhaps we can start off with Dr. Naudi.
Thank you, Trish. Gender mainstreaming, as you say, is a bit of a buzzword, and not many people maybe fully understand it. By gender mainstreaming, we mean that gender should be a part of everything. That's what we mean. And of course it is. It's, when I say it should be, it is. The point is, it is not recognized to be. So what we are saying is that we need to recognize that everything we do may affect the different genders differently. So if we are coming out with a new university regulation, if we are going to offer a specific course with a specific program of studies, if we are legislating in our country, policies, procedures, whatever, we need to look at it with a gendered lens. We need to look at everything and say, how does this affect the different genders? And we don't do this because the dominant gender is male, and generally most things are produced with that gendered stereotype in mind. Of course, we also have gender stereotypes. So we have the male gender stereotype and we have the female gender stereotypes. And again, these stereotypes are strong enough within our culture, and when I say within our culture, I don't mean because Malta is like, you know, behind or anything like that. Generally, society in Europe, definitely. These gender stereotypes are so strong that they are self-fulfilling prophecies. So women will not think, oh, I can be the next prime minister. They might think now, oh, I could be a president, because we have had two of those. And again, here role models become very important. You know, somebody said, you can't be what you can't see. And that is also very, very true. So for the women who are breaking those molds, those stereotypical molds, and the men, because men are also confined to their stereotypical role, which also reduces their overall life.
Mm-hmm. This is something that actually has come out quite strongly in the interviews that I've done so far in this particular series, that yes, it's gender mainstreaming in this case, both for females and males, that the masculinity issues are important. Obviously, as you said, that the male dominance is centuries old, millennia old probably, but they also sort of come into this consideration that mainstreaming brings into play, really. I would have thought.
Yes, yes. I don't know if you wanted a quick word about gender identities.
Yes, because gender is such a complex issue.
Yes, okay. So, of course, we start off with the difference between sex and gender. So sex is attributed according to the sexual characteristics, which are the physical characteristics. I mean, a baby is born with a penis or a baby is born with a vagina. Of course, we have intersex as well, but we won't go into that now. And therefore, that child is proclaimed a boy child or a girl child. Gender is the socially ascribed role, characteristics, etc., which a society considers appropriate for a man or a boy and a woman or a girl. So gender is not it's not something physical, okay? It is something which society has fed us with from our mother's milk, so to speak, and actually today from before, because we often know the gender of the child, the sex of the child before the child is actually born. Because of this separation between sex and gender, then gender identities were able to become, again, acknowledged. Okay, so gender identities obviously always existed. So then we have what we call cisgender and transgender. So cisgender is someone whose gender identity, that is, the gender that they feel they are, corresponds with their physical sexual characteristics. A transgender is someone whose internal feeling of the gender that they are does not match their external sexual characteristics. And of course, nowadays we have gender queer, we have gender non-conforming, so people who do not feel that they fit either gender or indeed both genders.
It is a complex issue, but it probably makes gender mainstreaming also with regard to policies, etc., slightly more complex than it might have been some time back.
I was asked recently about gender equality, one of the things I said was that for me, gender equality has been reached, which of course has not, but we will know when gender becomes irrelevant, when we are no longer gendered, but we are people, we are human beings.
Perhaps I can turn to Professor Camilleri Podesta with the second question. In this series, I've been asking many questions along the lines of, you know, why do we need to have more female engineers? What do they bring to the table? And have also discussed gender expectations, as we were saying, actually masculine and feminine expectations. And how does gender mainstreaming address those expectations, really? How can gender mainstreaming help in recognizing the differences, the diversities, as well as the similarities?
Yes, well, as members of the academic staff of the university, The Gender Issues Committee has been very much concerned with gender mainstreaming in the curriculum. And the idea is that Marcin said, every subject, whatever it is, including engineering, should be given this gender perspective. I come from the field of medicine, so if we take medicine as an example, whether it is medicine as such, a physician, cardiology, respiratory medicine, endocrinology, all of them have a gender perspective. And this is what we feel should be entrenched within the university curriculum. Now, this is not easy to achieve because we have tried even talking to various individuals, and unfortunately, some people almost make fun of you, you know. I mean, we are these feminists, sort of. But there, in medicine, for example, this is very important. That, heart attacks, when do they occur in men and when do they occur in women? And how is this related to their life cycle? So it has a very definite place. Now, we have, as the Gender Issues Committee, we have organized a seminar 2 years ago and got a speaker from the Charité Hospital, and whose role is actually to sit on the, that is her role, to sit on the curriculum committees of the various departments and make sure and keep reminding people, because people forget, that where is this gender perspective? And this is what we wish to achieve as a slow. I'm not going to expect that it's going to happen overnight, but it should be mainstream. This is the idea. It should be mainstream. Mm-hmm. Another approach which we are taking at the moment is to have at least a small component within the continuous professional development for the staff, for the academic staff. So at least they are introduced to this concept at an early stage, and hopefully as we go along, we will have instances where we will try to reinforce this issue.
So I suppose you're looking at, in this case, medicine, which has intrinsically gendered aspects to it, but also trying to encourage women to take up those roles, to become medics. And do you think that by doing that, it will be easier to achieve a better understanding? Is it because of it will bring diversity to the table?
I think so. I mean, it's not easy to achieve, because even the textbooks, most textbooks tell you, you know, as if there's no gender, it doesn't exist, this happens like that. But when you think of it, it is very important. And yes, why not? I mean, Germany, the Charité is one of the big hospitals in Berlin, and they can do it. It's done in other places, like Austria, for example. They do have this. But it is still in its infancy, unfortunately. Coming back to what you were saying about an engineer, what kind of engineer? Well, I mean, the spaces we live in are occupied by men and women. A woman, we believe, can give their own vision of what spaces should be available and should be put in the environment we live in.
I think that Marceline wanted to.
If I can also add to that, yes. What has been said is very important. Yes, of course it's important to have female engineers, and yes, it's important to have male kindergarten teachers, right? We each bring what we bring to the table, as you put it. However, it's Gender mainstreaming is not necessarily only about numbers. Numbers are important and we need to look at them, but we need to look at them to see where we are. Mm? But the continuous professional development that Marie-Thérèse just mentioned there is so important, because what we need to do really is change mentalities. Because you can bring a woman to the table and you can bring a man to the table, but if their mentality is stuck in the gender stereotypical roles, in the dominant male gender, in seeing things from that perspective, then bringing them to the table is not enough. So yes, of course it is important that we always have diversity, and here we're talking about gender, but of course all forms of diversity. However, on its own, it's not enough. We also need to work at changing those mentalities, and therefore the continuous professional development is very, very important, and the little bit of experience that we have had so far in it brought home to us how needed it is in relation to gender.
My follow-up question to that was going to be, how can gender mainstreaming be achieved? And you're suggesting this continuous professional development as one of those ways of doing that. What are the challenges to achieving those goals, though? And what other ways can be created to achieve them?
Well, our department, the Department of Gender Studies, has just carried out a gender audit of the Faculty for Social Wellbeing. The official results will be out soon. They're not yet out. And the idea is to actually roll this out to the rest of the university. Now, a gender audit is the starting point. It is like a mapping, if you like. Where are we now? Okay. So then we can see where we want to get to. Numbers, as I said, are important because we need to know where we are. And indeed,
they give you a baseline.
Yes, they give you a baseline, precisely. And if we look at the academic staff at the University of Malta at the moment and the hierarchy, if we look at assistant lecturer, which is the lowest grade that someone can be employed in the academic, we find that, in fact, there are more women than men at that grade. However, the higher up you go, that changes. I mean, actually, from the next grade up, from lecturer, it swaps the other way around. And then senior lecturer, it's much more. And when we get to professor, we have 84% of our professors who are male. As we said, Marie-Thérèse was the first female professor, and she remained the only female professor for 20 years. Well, listen, we still haven't caught up. We haven't caught up, because there are only 15% or so of the professors at the University of Malta who are female. Now, it's not because women are stupid, let's face it.
Hardly.
So we need to look at, what are the promotion criteria? How do these affect the different genders differently? What is it that women tend to do more of at the University of Malta and men tend to do more of at the University of Malta? You know, we need to. So when we talk about gender mainstreaming, we need to look at everything. Recruitment, promotion, how are these affecting the different genders differently? Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely. Yes, this series of programs is about looking at women on campus and also outside campus when they go into the world of work. So we're exemplifying here a situation that probably repeats itself.
Absolutely.
Outside. Outside. And the Council of Europe website comments that gender mainstreaming is a long-term strategy. And that always worries me a little bit, because I always feel it's a bit in conflict with the politicians who are actually creating policy in any country, not just in Malta, but in any democracy that usually changes its government or has elections every 5 years. It's very difficult for them to think long term. So how are we going to get them to think long term? Either of you.
Okay. The whole issue of gender, if any democratic government does not consider the issue of gender nowadays, then it's very much a faux pas. Okay. So the whole issue of gender normally is found in every political manifesto, okay? The issue of gender generally, the issue of violence against women maybe as well, domestic violence, and the issue of women in employment, gender pay gap, etc., etc. Now, for us, we're talking about gender mainstreaming, but of course the whole point of gender mainstreaming is about gender equality. For us to achieve gender equality, which is indeed a very long-term process. There are steps. I mean, you don't, you know, today not have gender equality and tomorrow have gender equality. Okay, there are steps. So any political party can focus on a specific area.
An issue.
Yes. And work on that. I mean, still, things like violence against women is still a long-term prevention and combating violence is a long-term thing. But they are always steps. So I think that in terms of politics, they have to look at the steps. And then they are able to say, so many more women in employment. Then they can say, gender pay gap has been reduced by so much.
Professor Gandhi-Costa, what about Malta? Do you feel that, I don't know, perhaps NGOs have a role to play in these, in the promotion of
anyone
this?
Anyone who has a role in forming public opinion has a role. In fact, everyone has a role. Every individual has a role. I believe a lot in role models. I always say this anecdote that when I became a houseman in 1969, sorry, before that, we were very few women doctors, and if you were a woman, it was assumed that you were the nurse. All right. So, and the nurse was a doctor if it was a male nurse. All right. So I used to be sort of refused by certain patients. No, I want a doctor. You're not a doctor. The implication. So creating role models is very important. And I also believe in the critical mass that to start changing people's mentality and perception, you need a critical mass. You need at least to achieve 40%. And this is, I think, one of the aims that is being aimed at increasing the number of parliamentary members to achieve this limit. And hopefully then the ball starts rolling on by itself, you know. So this is my idea. But I think that the university, where we are creating the leaders of tomorrow, the people who are going to be mind formers, has a very critical role to play. And this is why we need to really mainstream gender at university.
They don't see it here. They're not going to expect it elsewhere, I suppose.
And if the lecturers, the academic staff, are themselves not fully...
converted.
aware. If they themselves are not fully aware, then they're not going to pass on a good message.
I listened to some very interesting videos, or I watched where there was obviously a video, and listened when there was audio, to some very interesting videos on YouTube about mainstreaming. And it was very interesting to see where they were coming from, who was creating the video, because the story was different in South Africa, different in India, different in Norway, because they were dealing with different kinds of issues, different problems. Does Malta have its own particular issues, or do we here have the same problems as other European? Our European counterparts, shall we say, and who is best practice within Europe at the moment?
Okay, I would say that we do have the general problems that are found in Europe, but one thing which Malta is known for is the primacy of the family, so the importance that we give generally to the family. And tied in with that is that the woman, at the end of the day, is responsible for the well-being of the family. And that mentality is still so ingrained. Now, I'm not saying that a woman should abandon the family, because otherwise you're going to get many people calling in and complaining about that. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying, hey, the family includes women and men. In a same-sex couple, it might involve two women or two men. But it involves everybody who is part of that family. The well-being of the family should not be, by default, laid on the shoulders of the woman. Therefore, this default responsibility placed so strongly on the woman in our society, such that women feel so guilty. They feel so guilty if they're going out to work and they didn't help the child with their homework. You know, whatever. This default responsibility, I think, is really holding us back. It's really holding us back. And I'm going to tell you again, I'm not saying that a child should not be helped with their homework, or should not find clean clothes, or should not find a meal to eat. Okay, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying it is not the sole or primary responsibility of the mother or of the female person in the household. It should be a joint responsibility. And when we start to really share, women are now going out to work, which is great. They are earning an independent salary, which is great. But then they come home and the vast majority of the work in the home still falls on their shoulders. Again, I'm not saying that there are no men out there who help. Of course there are. But men often help, not take responsibility for. So there will be many women who will tell you, oh, my husband's really good, like, you know, he always helps me with
the washing up.
Yes, the laundry, whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's changing social cultural mores, which is very difficult, I think.
But I think that hopefully with women working and the structure of the family changing, it will become more it is essential that the men play as an equal or have to give their share because they are part of the family.
But then we also need to make aware the employers of the men, because very often I think they find themselves in a situation of not being able to do it even if they want to, because they've actually got they're in a situation where it's difficult to say, you know, I'm going home for my daughter's party or something.
All family friendly measures are available to men and women. I think it is difficult for them to say that because it is not expected of them as a man to say that, more than because they do not have the right, because they have the right to do it. But they might feel awkward because they are a man and they shouldn't be asking for it. And that's what we need to break.
Right, so. Well, unfortunately, we have run over our time, I think. I would like to thank Professor Maria-Therese Camilleri-Podesta and Dr. Marceline Naudier for coming to talk to us today.
Thank you, Trish.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to 100 Years of Women on Campus. If you would like to hear the programs again, just go to www.maltauniversitybroadcasting.com and click on webcasts. Join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
You have just listened to 100 Years of Women on Campus, produced and presented by Patricia Camilleri.